isolate the issues, so this meeting should not really take very long. I think we can advocate.
Thank you very much. May I suggest that before we start, we observe a moment silent for Mr. Katrada, because he was a member of this institution since 1994, and he contributed quite a bit to the freedom of our country.
You are very right. Yesterday and the day before yesterday, we did that. And I don't know why today maybe people thought that because he has been laid to rest, maybe we should move back to him.
Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, it's a great privilege for us as the new commission to be here before you to present our annual performance plan and budget and strategy document. We wish to thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to say that today all the members of the newly appointed commission are here with me. I do not know whether it is necessary to introduce them by name. They were appointed by this committee. We are here with the acting CEO, Mr. McKenetta, and with the COO of the commission, and the two of them will help me with the presentation. We also have some of the staff members sitting behind me. The commission, the new commission, did start its work on the 3rd of January 2017, and we are almost 3 months old in our work. What we've done is that in the first week or so, we had the introduction into the processes of and the work of the commission. Unfortunately, we didn't have the handover because the previous commission had the term of that commission had ended around October in 2016. However, the induction was quite instructive and very helpful to the commission. We then had to, as it was close to the end of the financial year, we had to review the existing strategy. The commission has got a strategy from 2015 to 2020. We reviewed that strategy and then we worked on our 2017-2018 annual performance plans and the budget, and the organizational structure, which, as I said, my the two senior officials of the Commission will present. The term of the previous Commission ended before the end of the financial year, and therefore one of the urgent matters that the Commission had to attend to were the review and approval of third quarter performance and expenditure report, and also then to deal with the fourth quarter, in terms of which the commissioners were engaged in delivering the deliverables that the previous commission had put together and had been approved by this committee. I'm pleased to say that that work has been done in spite of the pressures, the time pressures, and we seem to be on good ground. When we arrived, we found that the chief executive officer had left, and it became our task then to launch the process of recruiting the CEO. We have now passed the stage when we interviewed candidates and done the necessary tests. The commission now has to meet and make the appointment, and I hope that this is going to happen within the forthcoming 2 weeks. The commission then also had then to arrange its own focus areas and priorities for the commissioners for the 2017-2018 deliverables. That have been done. The picture is that the chairperson will be focusing on migration and health, the deputy on equality and racism, Commissioner Malaji will be on disability and older persons, Commissioner Magwetla will be on children, youth and women's rights, Commissioner Gum on education, Commissioner Mirmia on access to justice and housing, Commissioner Sibanyoni on rural development, agriculture, forestry, fisheries and the rights of farm workers, Commissioner Nissen on natural resources, law enforcement and the environment. In addition to this, the Commission has been doing substantive work. I am very pleased that this morning we attended a press conference by the Provincial Minister of Human Settlements, and as well as the Provincial Minister of Social Development in the Western Cape, in terms of which we have negotiated a partnership in order to provide housing for people, for older people and people living with disabilities. We will soon be drafting a memorandum of understanding. And we also got a commitment from especially the Minister of Social Development to work very closely, from both of them, but in particular the Minister of Social Development, to work very closely with us, and we look forward to that, and we believe that perhaps we will be able to achieve a lot more through those commitments, which we have started to implement or to explore in other provinces, with a view to trying to move our agenda much quicker. We had a racism hearing in February because of the phenomenon that we find that in spite of the 2 decades of democracy, we still get many complaints. In fact, the complaints on equality and racism, they top our statistics as the highest prevalent complaints. And so we've done that, but specifically with the focus on social media, we are preparing a report on that. The main aim being to determine whether there are any good ways or best ways which we can use in order to deal with racism on the social media, because we have found that it is a bit challenging to deal with that. We have been doing our work on the basis of complaints received, but we also have decided as the Commission that we are going to use the provisions of legislation that enable the Commission to do own initiatives. We have, for example, in the Western Cape, on the Cape Flats, initiated a mediation process because of the level of violence that takes away the right to human life in those areas where the statistic is that per day up to 8 people get killed. And the first dialogue started on the 15th of March, and we are going to have follow-up sometime in May. What we're trying to do is to bring the human rights discourse to mediate in a way that may have the impact of reducing the violence and therefore greater respect for the right to life. We have been to the Northern Cape to talk with the Khoisan people who are unhappy with regard to the level at which their language and culture are being handled, and we've been to discussions with the SABC and got an agreement that greater prominence would be given to that. We've been to the Eastern Cape to talk about issues of schooling that deny access to the right to education, with very dilapidated schools, with lack of access to water. We have been following up on the recommendations in the previous commission's hearing on access to emergency health care. I have been to the Free State a few weeks ago, and the problem is also prevalent there, and we're following up. We're also trying to assist the communities in Limpopo to facilitate a healthy environment between the Malepa people and the mining industry there, because there have been quite a lot of problems. When we arrived, in the commission, there was the issue in a number of provinces relating to access to education, in terms of which learners did not have access to schools. In Johannesburg, the number was fixed at about 150,000, and there were varying numbers elsewhere, and we had to deal with that not only in Gauteng, but also in the Western Cape, in Limpopo, and everywhere. There was also the issue of the delivery of learning materials for learners, and we've engaged with the Minister of Basic Education. We've engaged with some of the MECs, not only to see people being admitted, but also to see what support they get in terms of education, in terms of education tasks and teaching materials. But we also have undertaken to have an ongoing engagement with the minister. We'll be meeting her again either next month or the month thereafter, because our aim is to try and see whether in 2018 we can plan in such a way that the problems that were experienced this year could be either reduced or eliminated. We deal with the issue of racism in terms of helping people that find themselves being victims of racist attacks, and we are trying to bump up our capacity in order to implement the PEPUDA. We are involved in the Mpumalanga coffin case, and we have helped the two young men who were attacked there to launch the necessary actions in in the equality courts. We have helped a young person in Limpopo and got judgment, a transgender person, and got judgment because of the way in which her rights or his rights were affected. We know that we need to reach all the areas of the country, all the parts of the country, because there are many parts of the country where we have not been felt. And we are looking at ways in which we can do this. We have spoken about the possibilities of mobile clinics, for example, because of the limited resources that the Commission has. We are partnering with civil society to a much greater extent. We would like to use the media and other strategies in order to try and spread the gospel of human rights throughout the country. We are aware that the previous commissions have made recommendations, and we are confronted with the question of what are we going to do with those recommendations. We're trying to work on a strategy to see how we can deal with those recommendations. One of the problems that we have identified is the fact that it looks to us that sometimes, even when we engage with the relevant stakeholders, especially government departments, sometimes we do not succeed. We would like to seek the support of the portfolio committee in engaging government departments so that many of these recommendations should be implemented. For example, we've had these xenophobic attacks in Gauteng. In 2008, the commission had actually made the hearing and made recommendations which, if implemented, some of which would have dealt with the problem, and it wasn't. But when the xenophobic attacks came up, we engaged with the stakeholders, we engaged with the commissioner, the acting national commissioner of police, to try and deal with the problem. We are using our advocacy and communication unit to try and spread the gospel. We said to the national commissioner, we need to join hands to identify possible hotspots and see how we can act before xenophobic attacks arise. I participated in a consultative workshop organized by the Minister of Home Affairs on the new immigration policy, and stressed that it is important that policy should learn lessons from what has happened in the past and use those lessons in order to produce a policy that tends to deal with the foreign nationals in a way that they are not exposed too much to attacks, and that their rights are not violated as had happened in the case of those that are detained in Lindela. The strategy that we are working within is a strategy that when we arrived, we found that it had been in operation already, and there was a budget that was approved in respect of that strategy. And so our movement is quite limited by that, and also by the time that we had at our disposal. So for the time being, we are going to work within the strategy 2015-2020. But I foresee that in the next 2 or so years, we will be working towards crafting a strategy 2021 to 2025, and that perhaps we will factor in some of the things that we think need to be factored in. For example, we still see the impact of the violations of the rights of farm workers, in the sense that when they are violated, the farm workers are then driven out of the farms and they go to towns and they create housing issues there, issues relating to the delivery of water and sanitation, and so on, schooling and other problems. We can succeed in doing what we, as commissioners, are quite enthusiastic to do if we have resources. And I'd like to conclude by saying, Chair, that without resources, really, it is going to be difficult for the Commission to do as much as it is expected to do and to do as much as it would like to do. We would like to appeal to the Portfolio Committee to assist the Commission in securing more resources. On our side, we are also looking at ways in which we can work smarter so that we do not need a lot more money. In other words, to be able to do more with the little that we have. One of the matters in that regard that I'd like to raise is that we have realized that since we started, there's so much work that needs to be done, and we are having two commissioners who are working part-time, and this makes it very, very difficult for us. It would be better if perhaps all commissioners were made full-time. I met with His Excellency the President in January, and I mentioned this to him, that we would be greatly assisted if there is a way in which the part-time commissioners are also made full-time commissioners, because then we will have not adequate, but a little bit more capacity in order to do the work that we need to do. Chairperson, with your permission, may I request the acting CEO and the CEO then to take a few minutes to make the presentation of our annual performance plans and strategy, which I am made to understand have been read. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. The strategic objectives, basically for the 2017-18, we've got them listed there. Chairperson has already given the background on how this annual performance plan was formulated. It was more also having taken the comments, Honourable Chair, that were raised when we came for our annual report, in terms of making sure that the issue of feasibility and impact assessment are being taken care of. So our strategic objectives haven't changed. First one is about promoting compliance with international and regional obligations, and then advancing the realization of human rights, deepening understanding of human rights to entrench human rights culture, and also ensuring fulfillment of the constitutional and legislative mandates. And the fifth objective is about improving the effectiveness and efficiency of the Commission, given the budgetary constraints that we face. So what we've done here is to just extract from the annual performance plan which has been circulated to the members. So the first objective, basically, Chair, is the one that deals with our monitoring, wherein some of the indicators we've listed there is to complete a report of annual international and regional human rights, and also ensure that some of the submission of those reports are being completed, and then also the finalization of our complaints. Our target is still set at 85%. And then also our annual trends analysis report, which basically gives us a sense of the kind of complaints we are dealing with and how those can be done. So we're planning on the 17-18 to have four investigative hearings. And I think this gives commissioners and the secretary some leeway in terms of identifying as the human rights issues are coming up, which can then inform hearings specifically based on the complaints that we're getting, and also on some of the unforeseen complaints that might come. And also one of the issues that has been raised was here in terms of monitoring that the recommendations, as Chairperson has indicated, the recommendations that have been issued by the Commission over the years. We engage the relevant departments in terms of making sure that
there is status update also as well as implementation of those recommendations. And the next strategic objective three, it's more about our advocacy drive in terms of ensuring that we complete a report at the end of the financial year on the extent of our advocacy work. And also there will be around 8 thematic discussion papers based on the topical issues of human rights. And also we have developed an advocacy strategic plan over the years, and then our focus in this new financial year is to ensure that strategic plan gets implemented. And strategic objective four, Chair, is that the one that is linked to our monitoring. There we're looking at completing the section 184, Economic and Social Rights Recommendations Report, and also complete an annual equality report, and there's focus as well on the civil and political rights research briefs which we present to Parliament. And then there's also then the submission of the annual report as per the statutory requirements. The strategic objective five is more the one that drives our effectiveness and efficiency, the issue of risk management plans, and also the implementing our human resources and IT strategic plans to ensure that all the issues, because the issues that were raised by the AG over the years have now found their way into the strategic plan. We've set up the IT steering committees. We made sure that the IT strategic plans are approved. So 17-18 will see us implementing that. And then also the issue of complying with our institutional policies as well. And then it continues into the budget. Our budget, as you will see, is 173 million, and then 69% basically of our budget is committed to our personnel costs, which is the bigger chunk of our budget. And then the next biggest chunk is on our admin and supply chain, where of the 27 million, 19 million of that money is for our office rentals. And this is something that we've been trying to work on together with the other institutions that support the democracy in terms of how we can reduce this issue of costs, also with a view of implementing the recommendations of the CADA ASMAR, wherein there was a proposal that the issue of having a consolidated precinct for the Chapter 9 institutions. So that's something which is currently being pursued at the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy. So our analysis, I've just touched on it here in terms of how our budget has been allocated. You see 69% goes to personnel, and close to 2.9 million of our budget goes to the Auditor General. And this is one, Chair, another issue which is being considered at the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy, to say there has to be a review in terms of negotiating with the Auditor General to check if we cannot get an exemption. Because if we can get that 2.9 million for our core work, it will assist in terms of driving our advocacy and our legal work. So basically, if you look at our budget, Honourable Chair, only 7.8% of the total allocation is allocated to the core work. And at the previous commissioners meeting, the commissioners want us to really, as a secretariat, to review that so that our budget goes more to the core work. I've touched on our personnel costs. We filled most of our vacancies. The Western Cape vacancy has been there, but we found a provincial manager who will start on the 1st of May. And then our Gauteng province also had a vacancy, but we've now moved our Free State provincial manager, who will be going to Gauteng. And then the only vacancy we'll have now will be for the Free State, which we will fill in the first quarter of the financial year. Chair, the next slide just shows you how our budget has been structured in terms of the National Treasury, wherein Program 1 deals with our administration, which is Human Resources Admin, Internal Audit and the CEO's Office. That takes about 50% of our budget. And Program 2 is the one that deals with a promotion and protection mandate, where we're looking at the legal services and advocacy in our provinces. And program three deals with our research and M&E. That's also the allocation there. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to hand over to the CEO, who will then deal with the remainder of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Honourable Committee members. Chair, our Chairperson has addressed this meeting about the priorities for the Commission, the activities we consider desirable, and our CEO has presented the budget. I will be talking a little bit about the projects we consider desirable that assist us with the priorities but which remain unfunded. And later I will take the House through an overview of performance by the Commission up to quarter three of 2016. So Chairperson, broadly there are three critical areas that the Commission has identified, having taken on board the input and guidance from this committee. These areas are wanting and seeking to increase visibility and access to justice. Secondly, to be able to monitor and measure impact coming out of the number of valuable reports the Commission has produced, but also as a means to inform our own work and to increase the value of the impact we make. And thirdly, and perhaps most pressingly for the Commission, is the compliance obligation with which the Commission is faced, both as a result of judgments emanating from our courts and as a result of its status as a national human rights institution, which bears responsibilities under international instruments to undertake certain monitoring functions. So, in summary, these projects which are unfunded and which we seek to raise funding for relate to monitoring and evaluation studies, both in the sense of primary research for the monitoring activities we conduct in terms of the Constitution, the realization of economic and social rights, and the monitoring that is our obligation in terms of court orders. I'll speak a little bit more about the court orders in a slide to follow. The Commission is also very, very interested in implementing and creating mobile clinics to assist us reach vulnerable communities and provincial provinces that have large geographical terrains. As with just one staff on a staff member on the ground to reach these communities in such provinces, it becomes near impossible to reach the communities, all of the communities we would like to be able to reach. We also would want to think through and be able to raise funding to create satellite offices in your more populous provinces, again, largely to be able to meet volume and demand, but also in terms of provinces that have a large geographical terrain, so that we have a presence and are able to be reached by members of the community. The component of advocacy has been broken up into wanting to develop material that is relevant, so relevant to the needs of persons with disabilities, relevant to children, and youth empowerment. To do this, we would want to showcase the Commission's work, its mandate and how people can reach us, and to share an understanding with the public of the kind of work the Commission does and what they can access us about. At a different level, we would want to have and initiate an annual human rights lecture program to create precedential value on research coming out in the human rights sector to assist and support other human rights activists and organizations wishing to reference a body of human rights work. So, Chairperson, those broadly are the critical areas that we thought we would want to raise funds about. However, the issue of compliance with court orders emanating from our courts which impose responsibilities on us have posed a significant challenge, and the Commission has had to think through whether we apply to the court for a variation order or allow ourselves to be in contempt of court or find some mechanism through which we can partially fulfill these mandates. Monitoring the 435 designated places of detention for foreign nationals is one such requirement on us, emanating from the judgment in the Lindela matter. Presently, the Commission is monitoring Lindela, but recognizes that there is a need to monitor nationally through its provincial offices places of detention. This monitoring is unfunded for the Commission at this point. Secondly, are the monitoring obligations that arise, Chairperson, in terms of international instruments. The Convention on the Rights Protection of Persons with Disabilities requires the Commission to monitor places where persons with disabilities reside, care institutions. We've developed a toolkit. We would need to test that against private business, and the Commission does not have the resources to conduct such monitoring at the scale that is required. And then there's new domestic legislation arising from the prevention of torture at the international level. South Africa has domesticated law prohibiting torture. Again, the Commission and bodies like the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services would need to be able to be in a position to monitor places of detention, not traditionally just correctional services facilities, but places where youth are detained, where children are detained, where the mentally ill are detained, and these require resources. So at present, the Commission doesn't have the resources to fulfill these mandates to the extent that is required. And then finally, Chairperson, on the issue of funding, is the Commission's desire to be able to initiate and participate in strategic impact litigation, which has a national impact on members of the public. The committee may be aware of the Commission's involvement in the emoluments attachment order matter, where the Commission participated and assisted the court so that unscrupulous debtors do not simply take judgment against people to whom monies are lent when they are unable to pay. This type of matter, very much like the SASSA matter, often becomes out of our reach because our thin resources prevent us from meeting the kind of a legal argument and strength that is before a court. Often these matters go to court and there are five private suits, and the Commission has one counsel. But the Commission wants to be in a place where it is able to initiate strategic impact litigation in the interests of the public, and we've projected some costs for these, Chairperson. The slide that is projected right now suggests a need of some 42 million rand for us to be able to fulfill these functions. What we have been doing, and having taken the comments from the meeting with Parliament at its last appearance in February, what the Commission has been attempting to do is to look inside itself to assess how we may improve our own efficiencies so that the resources that we do have can be better deployed. To do this, we will need
You have 5 minutes, so don't give too many examples.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. So to do this, we do need to be able to access technology, and this too comes at a cost. That really, Chairperson, is the overview of our funding needs, and perhaps with your leave, if I may proceed then to the Q3 performance for the Commission.
Is there no other presentation on the budget? That one is covered. Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So, Chairperson, this is the presentation we have tabled with you. Is the overview of performance as at 31st December 2016. We had achieved at that date 74% of our annual work plan. 26% at that stage remained to be achieved. These have now all been achieved as we reach the end of March, and we're largely our reporting, statutory reporting obligations. So we've finalized at 31 December 75% of the complaints before the Commission. This was a total of 8,166 complaints. Our trends analysis report is also shortly to be completed, with the statistics for the few remaining dates in March being considered, and that report will be tabled with the committee. We conducted four investigative hearings on protest-related action and the right to basic education, the socioeconomic rights of mining-affected communities. We completed hearings on the rights of Indigenous persons and discrimination in the workplace, and we released a report on transformation of public institutions of higher learning. I discussed a little bit the monitoring resulting in us having to monitor Lundela, and I will not address that in the Q3 performance. Safe to say that monitoring has been occurring, and we produce quarterly reports of our findings, which are shared with the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs. The remaining deliverables were either at the stage of Q3 ongoing and to be delivered at the 31st or at the end of March, Chairperson. Perhaps if we can move to the slide on expenditure. Our core spend as at the end of December has been highlighted, and the variable in spending to be achieved then at the end of quarter four, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Anything else?
Chairperson, I do not have anything else to add. I just want to say that sometimes it becomes necessary to resort to litigation because the impact of that litigation may help many communities, even those that have not come to complain or those that we have not identified. Our biggest problem and frustration, if I may add, Chairperson, is that even though as the CEO has said, that we do go with one counsel to the High Court, you find that it's borrowed counsel, if I could use that word with respect, because it's counsel that we get on pro bono basis, and sometimes complainants or communities have to wait a very long time because the pro bono counsel will always put his time in favor of those clients that are paying, and because we're not paying, we get postponed, and it results in a lot of frustration on the part of the clients and a lot of delay in the resolution of their cases. Thank you.
Honorable members, you have heard for yourself. Any I'll take hands now. Honorable Schwartz. Honorable Matthias. Honorable Bongo. Honorable Maila. Oh, Honorable Horn. You see, Honorable Bongo is very helpful. Eh?
He wants something from me.
No, you are his colleague. He must tend to you when in times of need. Honorable Majake. Okay, let's start with you, Honorable Lesser.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Chairperson of the Commission and Deputy Chair and all the commissioners that are here. You have, as my colleague would probably say, hit the ground running. You've done a lot of good work so far, and thank you for this extensive report, again, which is presented under very difficult financial conditions. And I think that if it was my way, and I'm sure my colleagues, we would love to just give you as much money. And you, I notice you haven't asked for an extra billion rand like an earlier Chapter 9 institution asked. But it is this very serious challenge. And so when we exercise oversight and we ask questions, we've got to see it against the background, Chair, of a limited budget that we are given, the Human Rights Commission. So with that in mind, I would just like to ask, one of the great concerns to me is these court orders that have required you to do oversight functions. And it must be something, Chair, that whilst we appreciate the courts have got that jurisdiction and that they think very highly of the Human Rights Commission to give you that task, they obviously don't understand the budget conditions. And I would hate the media to pick up something that you were in contempt of court or something. So maybe it might be better to, and again, it's costly to go back to those courts and ask for a waiver or something of that. Again, one presumes when those matters were heard, you indicated, or maybe you didn't, but that it places financial obligations on you as well. So that is something that is a matter of concern. Chairperson, as we know, there are the annual reports that the Constitution requires government departments to provide to the Commission relating to the progressive realization of socioeconomic rights. And I have a specific question, you might not be able to answer it, but whether there was a report on social security when one considers the SASA debacle and whether there was any report as to the Constitutional Court, because that would have been an annual report that has been given to you. The Constitutional Court declared the contract illegal, gave 3 years to implement that. What did the department or SASA, whether they report you annually, indicate as far as the progressive realization of social security? Then, and Chair, I know there's a number, so you might have to stop me, but the information regulator, have you had a discussion with the newly appointed information regulator that will be taken over your prior responsibilities? And then the issue relating to the report on land, 30 July 2014, your previous commissions brought out a very extensive report on investigating and monitoring the systemic challenges related to land. To what degree were those recommendations implemented? Because I think that is a major challenge for the Human Rights Commission, where you bring out very good reports. Your reports are not binding, they are advisory. And then the challenge is to what degree can they be implemented? Chairperson of the Commission, you referred to the report on the xenophobic attacks, and I actually alluded to that report in Parliament, and I share your sentiment that had some of those proposals been implemented, the more recent xenophobic attacks could have been avoided. So I think that is an issue that one most definitely also needs to look into. And then, Chairperson, the large number of racism issues that you are faced with, the complaints, and it is a challenge in society. And is it not something to also engage the religious community of all faiths to also start assisting in a dialogue and in building, nation building? We can pass laws, and we'll be looking at laws in that regard, but it could be that we need the religious community to come alongside to start nation building and to understand the evils of racism. And I think that could be something to look into, because you've got a very limited budget with a massive responsibility. And I think that you can only do so much with the funds that you are given. The last point that I wanted to ask is your working relationship with the office in Parliament that supports the Chapter 9 institutions. How is that? You might not have much experience. The previous commissioners might be able to just assist with that. Mr. Mira in a better way and to give us an indication of whether that is assisting, because you file all your reports studiously. And it has been a frustration from previous commissioners as to what happens with those reports. And maybe, Chair, that's an issue that we can also start taking up. And then lastly, the non-compliance. You have got certain statutory powers to issue summons to departments. You obviously don't want to use that. But where there is non-compliance with far-reaching recommendations that you make, either we as Parliament can help you, but as the last step, you then can subpoena those persons to appear before you. To what degree would you consider using those avenues? But clearly we from Parliament need to assist you far more in exercising the statutory powers that you're given. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Well, let me also join Honourable Swartz in welcoming the commissioners. They hardly, I think, not more than 3 months in office. And then they are fairly, very new and in the process of familiarizing themselves with the dynamics in the institution. So we may not be so much hard on them. We just have to be gentle with them as they go about the familiarization phase of the work that lies ahead. Well, just as noting some few points which are, of course, taking from where Honorable Swartz has left off, areas of concerns, and one of which about the effectiveness of the Commission in the fulfillment of its constitutional mandate, particularly Section 184 of the Constitution, which empowers them to promote, to monitor and to assess the observance of human rights, to promote the culture of human rights and development and so forth. It's important that on a continuous basis the Commission get some clarity on the work that they do, investigations that it commissions, the status of those, and as well as the recommendation that emerges from such investigations. It can't just be a commission that promotes the culture of human rights and makes ensure that state organs observe the human rights and all of that. In instances where of violation of such human rights, it commissions investigations with recommendations which seem not to be having any status insofar as enforcement is concerned. So I think that lack of clarity must be overcome. Perhaps that will need a review of the Human Rights Act as it currently stands to enable the Commission to have those powers to enforce its recommendations. I think it finds itself in a similar situation with the South African Auditor General's office, where it makes findings on performance of state, on finances, audit the books, makes recommendations, but it lacks the ability to enforce its findings. I think it's something which perhaps we'll have to overcome, which may necessitate the review of the Human Rights Act in its current form. Secondly, and this will be my last point, look, as elites and their different forms, their different formations, whether ruling or governing elites, once they realize that their hold on power is under threat, they start to do unsavory things, and they resort to all forms of human rights violation and all of that. And we have got history that we can make reference to. And I think the Human Rights Commission must gear itself towards that reality. A new set of challenges are emerging as a result of elites realizing that they stand to lose so much as their hold on power is threatened. And we need to position yourself to combat such intentions by elites as they
run them to act on speculations.
No, this is not on speculation, and I'm not speculating anything. I'm saying using history as a hindsight and learning from experiences of other nations and countries, elites, as and when they feel threatened by changes, they tend to resort to unsavory behavior and conduct which may result into violation of human rights. I don't know why you are so impatient with me, but it's fine. And Honorable Chair.
My thanks is for your understanding, as always. Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I must just congratulate Prof and all the commissioners, Chair, one more time for the appointment. And thank you for the presentation. I see, Chair, this time the way it's constituted, there's somebody from home. And I think it does not constitute any conflict of interest. Yeah, so, no, thanks, Chair. I want to start with the issue relating to budgets. You know, I quite sympathize with the fact that there is a problem with the fiscus. You know, every Chapter 9 institution that gets into the room tells us that we need more funding. There's a problem with funding. We need more money. And the issue of money is no longer an issue that relates to this department or this cluster. But I'm sure everyone else in all other committees, there is a need for more resources. So it's a matter that I do really sympathize with. Now, I would not say myself, like Matthias, that we are new, because from all your CVs, all I've seen that you are quite very rich people, from rich people in terms of human rights activism. So I will not generally treat you as new people in the office, because your track record in the human rights field speaks volumes. You said you want full time, or everyone must be full time. And I'm using that because the last time we had an interaction here, we had an issue which I thought you'll also report about. The issue that relates to full time and part time. Wherein you said there are some commissioners who are full time, they still want to be part-time whilst they are full-time, but they want to be based in their respective areas where they are. So if we were to accede to the fact that everyone must be full-time, then I'm not going to have the same problem that a person would want to be full-time and stay in Mpumalanga whilst he's full-time. Just stay there and attend to issues of Mpumalanga. And we requested last time as the committee that you present a model that will define whatever proposal that we have made. And that model must be in line with the King III report in terms of cooperative governance. In our budget review and recommendations report last time, we had raised sharply, as we reported, that the issue of awareness and visibility must be one of the issues that must be taken as a priority by yourself. I just want to check the extent to which we have programmatized the issue of awareness and visibility. The AG has sharply commented about the issue of internal audit. You'll note that we have a view as the committee that the institutions that are meant to protect human rights and are meant to protect the integrity of our people are supposed to be generally getting clean audits. So you fall within that particular class. So you'll not be able to achieve that if your internal audits are not properly dealt with. I think the recent court judgment about the binding nature of decisions of Chapter 9 institution also do give you a leeway in terms of enforcement of some of the recommendations that you have. But of importance, I want to get your program around the issue of cooperation with other Chapter 9 institutions. Because what we are facing now, we find that there are overlaps between these Chapter 9 institutions in terms of the issues that they've been attended to. And I want to also comment on this information regulator, because we have just appointed commissioners for information regulator. And part of the AIA mandate is what may be overlapping, depending on how you deal with cooperation with one another. And I also want a brief report on the issue, because you would remember that we raised it sharply on the interviews with some of the commissioners, the issue about the life as it many project, and what were the programmatic steps that we have taken since you got in ensuring that you rectify the issues that arose from the life as it many matter. But now, as human rights, there is this issue that is continuing, farms. You know, the public protector visited some farms in ML, and we found out that there are serious human rights abuses in the farms. The extent to which we want to deal with this matter, what will be your roadmap in terms of ensuring, because if you just take ML is just an isolated area. If you were to take the Western Cape and all other provinces, it means we might have not moved with the speed at which we expected to move in terms of dealing with the human rights in terms of the farm workers and so on. But recently, because when President Mandela got into office, we had seeked to build what we called a rainbow nation, Chairperson. Rainbow Nation, which seeks to ensure that we try to bury the issues that it affected the people of this country in the past and so on. But what will be your role in this context wherein a senior leader of government will just stand up and say colonialism was the best and stands by those things? What should be your immediate reaction when a senior leader of government, a senior leader of a party says, no, colonialism, whilst majority of our people are still suffering against that backdrop of colonialism? And lastly, Chair, I think part of the project that we must do is to take stock of how far have we moved in terms of this project of human rights, maybe since 1994, how far have we moved, so that we can have a yardstick against which were able to say, this is where we're going, this is the pace at which we must be able to run, because we may have moved half or a quarter and so on, and because that will determine a pace at which we must move in terms of fighting for the human rights. Thank you, Chair.
Bongo, Honorable Maila.
Chair, before Honorable Maila speaks, I was checking with Honorable Mpumlan and Honorable Swar. I was here when you allowed Honorable Bongo to speak. I went and I came. He was still speaking. I was asking, did I speak longer than him? And they all confirmed that, no, you were much shorter than him.
At the back, that you can put your issues pointedly and save time for... So congratulations.
Can I go on, Chairperson? Okay, thanks very much. Thanks very much, Chairperson, and all the commissioners for the report. And once more, let me also appreciate the fact that you were able to beef up Commissioner Mirmir, who was the last man standing. Yes. Chairperson, following on what Honorable Bongwe said on the issue of the audit, I would like maybe the Commission to pledge to us on how they intend to deal with the issue of the audit. What outcome do they think will be a possible outcome in the next audit cycle? And looking at how functions were allocated to commissioners, my take is that you are coming with a strategy which says no commissioner belongs to a particular part of the country. You will be looking, your outlook will be countrywide, which I think is commendable, in my opinion. Now, before you got into office, there was indication that there was a problem of a low staff morale in the commission. And I would like to know what is the situation now, what strategies are being put in place to remedy that situation, if it still persists. On looking on the issue of xenophobia, not only xenophobia, but also service delivery, violent service delivery protests, I would think the Commission will need to be in partnership with some stakeholders who can be able to sniff the ground. Otherwise, we'll always be running after happenings. We won't be able to... We need to have an early warning, so that you can be able to deal with some of the situations. Now, earlier on, as we were engaging the public protector, I made a recommendation, which Commissioner Amermia knows, that sometimes back, I was a coordinator of community development workers in Limpopo. And what I've realized, being in that sphere, is that we have government employees who are not based in offices, who are based in communities, who are able to get in touch with what is happening. The most unfortunate thing is when they report to their department might not be relevant to a particular situation, which might be a human rights issue. Now, if you have a partnership with such, you might be able to be fed with early warning, even before some of the things happen. And I would recommend that you consider having memorandum of understanding with such institutions. Honorable Bonga has already
talked on the issue of visibility, which to us is very key. Now, on the issue of racism, you see, my worry is that we deal with this, the issue of racism, like what doctors normally say, we try to cure the symptoms without addressing the causes. We talk of victims of racism on one hand, but my opinion is we have victims from both sides. There are those who are the recipients of racist attacks, but the racists themselves are victims. Because they come from a past which has prepared them not to be the South Africans of their times. And we need to come up with strategies to cure that illness, because they are sick, actually. And today is this one. Honorable Mutapo was giving examples of some of them. I don't want to go there. Today is this one, but tomorrow it will be another. One will be saying, I saw a man who looked like a pig. Then the next one says he was looking like a frog. Then the other one will be saying he was looking like a monkey. But they will be doing it. Because they are sick. They are victims. They have been prepared in such a manner that they are made to believe that they have what is called superiority complex. And that's very sick. So I think maybe the commission with other stakeholders need to come up with strategies to ensure that we heal even the causes of racism. Let me pause, Chairperson, before Honorable Matthias checks how long I've been talking.
You see, you are a very good role model. Okay, Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mpumulo, I've noted.
And I promise I will be equally quick. Yes. Chair, my first question relates to also some of the AG findings, and in the presentation today it's been referred to the IT governance framework, of which the Auditor General also previously complained, and it was said that a steering committee has been established and a plan approved. But from the presentation in respect of the budget, it's not quite clear whether this IT strategy is fully costed and budgeted for during this financial year, which will start on Saturday, and whether we've seen a trend that Chapter 9s seem to think that they're only able to implement these remedial steps incrementally. So I just want to know whether this is also the idea of the Human Rights Commission to only start implementing but not fully implement this year. Then, Chair, my second question is in respect of also there's been other members also alluded to the issue of reports and the fact that the way in which reports in contrast to findings must be dealt with is not quite clear. And I also had a look on the website of the Human Rights Commission, and I had a look at the ATCs, for example, of Parliament. And now in February there was 3 reports ATC'd. Now first of all, maybe a comment, not necessarily a criticism. The first two on the impact of protest action on basic education and transformation at public universities, unfortunately those reports on the website are not dated. And that that's a bit problematic, specifically if one in a few years' time go back to those reports and you don't have the luxury of knowing now that it was 80C early 2017, it will be difficult to understand the context and the gain value from those reports in terms of time frames. But then the third one really is the one I want to address, and that's the report on the safety and security challenges in farming communities. And from this report, it's quite clear that the hearings was conducted in September, October 2014, and it seems that the report was finalized by the end of 2015. But now it was ATC'd by the speaker only in February 2017. So the question arises, on the one hand, we say it's already a struggle to understand the way forward in respect of these reports, which does not necessarily have findings against somebody, but specifically, for example, also the issues on farmers and with farm attacks and so-called farm murders now being in the news as well. Quite possibly Parliament could have been in a position to deal with this report earlier. So that's the one arm of the question. And the second arm is then maybe related to that, and that's in respect of this the office supporting Chapter 9s or in situated in the office of the speaker. Previously we've had information that quite possibly this office is not functioning as it should. So the question is there still meetings of this entity within Parliament to assist Chapter 9s? And when, maybe a specific question, when was the last meeting held, and have the I don't want to say this new commission, but the commission been, since the bulk of the commissioners took office, been involved in any meeting of this office? Thank you, Chair.
And Honorable Majaki, and then Honorable Mpumulana, and then Honorable Mutapu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me take the opportunity of welcoming the presentation and to again welcome the commissions. To say that we are actually looking forward to a commission that is very viable to actually carry out the mandate. I've actually realized that with your allocation of functions to commissioners, it appears as if there's insufficient provision for the rest of socioeconomic rights. As in, when I'm looking at water and sanitation, for example, it looks like there isn't really any dedicated commissioner for water and sanitation. You could look at the right to land. You could look at environmental rights, energy. Maybe somewhere you just need to write socioeconomic rights. I don't know, so that, you know, we know who will actually be dealing with matters of that nature. It will actually help to avoid having a gap in terms of the work that you're doing. And also, what's important in terms of the allocation, especially on the rights of children, youth and women's rights, is to avoid duplication with the Commission on Gender Equality. And I'm just cautioning because there was an instance where there was a bit of a problem as to who is responsible for some of the issues that were gender-related, when in actual fact we have a whole commission that is responsible for gender which is inclusive of women. I want to actually also add the same sentiments that were aired by Honorable Swart when he talked about your limited budget with this massive and broad mandate. which is something that we need to continue to look at in order for you not to find yourself being constrained by the budget. One thing is transformation and redress of imbalances in the South African society is in your hands. And this actually also relates to the court judgment that indicated that your findings or recommendations are binding. So which means you can be in the position to bring about true change in South Africa. We've been talking about change, which is not taking place. And this is why South Africans continue to have problems of jobs. That's why we continue to have a problem of racism. Mm-hmm. I hope the rest of the what I've been saying was actually heard. But what I'm actually referring to, yes, is it fine now? Is that transformation is in your hands. And now with the court judgment that was articulating the binding effect of the recommendations of the Chapter 9 institutions, it actually says that you can be in the position to bring about true change, which South Africans have been looking forward to. The whole issue of jobs, we are still grappling with it in South Africa, with racism, informal settlements, access to land, all of that. Look at the new perspective of looking at it in order for you to actually come up with enforcement mechanisms so that we shouldn't keep on talking about these things and finding that they are not actually becoming what we find to be what is desired. Earlier when we had the public protector here, I said, you know, there's this new slogan in South Africa that says freedom and democratic freedom without financial freedom is nothing. Through you, we can be in the position to work on it. So also another challenge is that there has been a time when we are focusing on rights awareness. South Africans know their rights. But if you look at the South African society today, it's a restless society. What do we do moving forward? Because it means we have to have some form of paradigm shift. We can't continue just to say we are going to do rights awareness. Because if you look at some of the outcomes of the rights awareness, is that then you find that you have this culture of entitlement, which means probably maybe within the rights, understanding of rights, South Africans don't also understand that within rights there are responsibilities. I don't know. You need to look at it so that we don't continue to have this culture of entitlement. And also for South Africans to understand that realization of rights should be looked at in the context of progressive nature of realization of rights within the resources that the country has. It will actually help to bring the necessary peace and balance within South Africa rather than find that there's always this unrest and people are so restless. And sometimes we can't even hear each other when we are talking about access to justice. We previously talked about the need for rotating the UN chair that that is within your control, United Nations, with other Chapter 9 institutions. Can you still continue to talk about it within the Forum for Chapter 9 Institutions? I think it's very important. And just the idea of rotation, so that you give
other Chapter 9 institutions an opportunity to have similar kind of experience, because some of them are actually totally out of UN mechanisms. I'm concluding, Chairperson. Your lease, that is about 19 million. It's too much. You could actually buy property with that amount of money. And this is what we've been suggesting. That, you know, instead of leasing for so much money, can't you go and buy property? And then it's an investment that, you know, you've got your property, and you can even make savings in terms of future budgets, if that could actually happen. And earlier the chairperson suggested that maybe you can actually also look, instead of buying property, we have too many government buildings that could still be utilized. You could just renovate. Though the challenge is that I'm sure you know that even Public Works is not in the position to fully account for government buildings, because there's the history of there's a history of asset register that got lost in South Africa, but I'm sure you can still give it a try. Sharing satellite offices. When you talked about satellite offices, I think it's very important to share them with other Chapter 9 institutions. When the public protector was here, they said they are doing clinics throughout provinces. 84, this is what they've planned for in per province, and we said, please look at the possibility of coming up with a shared model with other Chapter 9 institutions. So for yourself, with the satellite offices, you can still look at to what extent you can continue to apply the sharing model with other Chapter 9 institutions. Thank you, Chairperson. It wasn't long. I'm sure Chair is tired.
Thank you. I just want to say from the beginning, I was given a right by Mr. Matthias to take his what he didn't finish, you know, the time he didn't use. The first thing I wanted to say, to congratulate and say, congratulate the people. The first time I see them after they have been accepted personally, I wasn't there when they came. And to say that they have got the task that is in front of them is too much, because everybody in this country is a crybaby, and they would want them to us to come and assist them, babysit us all. I'm confused. Maybe I'm not aware. When I look at this. Areas, focus areas. It seems they are in government. They are government outside government. All this is a lot of everybody in these fields has got problems. I was wondering. I'm sorry. I was not in when you were here when you presented. I apologize. I'm not.
I apologize. I just put the point. Don't apologize.
Yeah, you see, I think also respect the age. You see, I'm the elder. There are things that I personally feel that need to be prioritized. Whether they form in whatever department, whoever minister is here. Understand Minister Sibanyoni is holding some of the farms and so on. No. I deliberately say this. I believe that if the approach is for the most vulnerable people, wherever they are, in whatever form it is, not a question that is not belonging to my department at all. That, number one, you'll have farm dwellers. You'll probably have people in the squatter camps and the rural areas. Then you come to the townships and so on.
And then you say these are priority areas. And secondly, if you could go for a proactive approach rather than a reactive approach, waiting for people to come and give problems, because if you do that, by the time you leave the office, you would have got a lot in front of you, because we'll keep on giving you for me. And we won't necessarily prioritize, and the people who are more vulnerable won't even have, don't even know about you, let alone having time to come to you. If you have a proactive and say, we're going to go from place to place, you know, and make sure that we listen to people where their problems are, and then solve them, rather than you wait for them. And the other thing is that with the Chapter 9 institutions, there is a tendency of people who are knowledgeable, people who read papers and so on, to say, okay, I can use the human rights because I'll keep them busy about certain things, so-called priority cases or high-profile cases. I think to me, the high-profile is those most vulnerable people, and that the concentration will be on them more than on the Baruti, most important Baruti. The last point, very, very last point, and the last of the last one.
is that I wanted to say thank you about the questions of the language, which you said you're going to, if you didn't, I request that you do, that you're going to prioritize using the African languages or the language of those people that are there, in you prioritize in your approach on them. You know, there is a problem in courts where you find the prosecutor. Once somebody said to me, and I think he was right, if you take the magistrate, the prosecutor, the policeman for a week and put them in prison, they will think twice before they postpone a case when somebody is in prison. In other words, if people, commissioners, don't know how those people live, their problems, you know, they will just theorize about it. It is very, very important to know each and every community, how do they live, what are the problems that are there. So I want to emphasize this by asking you to be more proactive than reactive. I thank you very much, Comrade.
And I think the last point you should have made was that Mr. Sibanyoni doesn't own a farm. He was just detained on a farm during the state of emergency, but he doesn't own that farm.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson of the Commission, Deputy Chair, Commissioners, let me follow my colleagues by congratulating you on your appointment. Chairperson, let me start by congratulating also the commissioners for the focus areas as stated on page 4. But there is a lot of work to do, especially on the issue of farm dwellers, which is Commissioner Sibanyoni's focus area, with specific reference to Waterberg in Limpopo. There are very serious cases there where dependents or children of deceased farm dwellers are refused access to the farms for residing purposes and to perform rituals as Africans. So please, especially Mokgopong, Modimolle, Bela Bela, in Waterberg. And again, another issue is the issue of education. The admission policy of previously white universities need attention. Commissioner Gom, needs attention. Because the policy on face value appears neutral. But when you start interrogating, it somehow discriminate upon black students, especially those coming from rural areas. So also take that into consideration. And let me congratulate you, Prof. Your commission, the commission, through you, chairperson of the commission, Prof. Majola, who used to be my former dean at university, then University of the North, now Limpopo. For, although by then you were not part of the commission, for having received 2015-16 unqualified audit opinion with no findings. But I'm concerned about accessibility. You know, Public Protector appeared before this committee. As a committee, we're very much impressed about the number of clinics or access, his intention of being accessible in terms of Section 181, Subsection 5 of the Constitution to communities, especially rural communities. But your offices are mostly in towns. Let me take Limpopo for an example. Your office is in town library gardens. Imagine someone from Malebogo, Nugu will bear with me, Malebogo has to catch 4 o'clock bus to Bulugwane. It's 3.5 hours. Then that particular person will then arrive around 7, 8 in Bulugwane. Then very long queues. So maybe if you may reconsider having the same mode of operation, clinics, as some of my colleagues have alluded to. I don't know whether it's you, chairperson, or you alluded to, Honorable Majagi have alluded to be more accessible to communities. Commissioner Nissen, Natural Resources, the mining charter implementation thereof. You know, there are mining activities which are taking place, especially in most cases I'll refer to rural areas in Pukuneland. But nearby communities are so poor. There is abject poverty in that area. So also, in terms of mining charter, take that into consideration. Mining houses, in terms they have a corporate responsibility to plow back into the community. So that also should be looked into. The land issue, very, 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 very critical. And I think the commission has undertaken a research some time ago. So that also, please, the land question, look into it. Because we can't. The government has requested people who have been deprived of land to lodge claims. The due date by then was 1998. Now it has been extended. Next year will be 20 years. But nothing, especially the communal land. because there is what is called concurrent claimants. So I request that that should also be looked into. But I would like, and again, issue of information regulator, you, in terms of promotion of access to information act, the commission was to perform certain duties in terms of this, but now the information regulator is in place and has taken over. Now, did the commission ever had a meeting with the information regulator, hand over the report? If so, may you kindly elaborate on that? If not, maybe you can just share with us what your intention is. Thank you so much, Chair.
Happy that we are actually helping to define an agenda here. Chairperson, I think historically we were so concerned with the political rights to the extent that we, and that is not about you, but as South Africans, we generally think that our agenda is just about political rights. But in this country, you also have human and people's rights. And the people's rights are not even referred to when we do things. If you take the situation of Skukuneland that has been mentioned, it's not a human rights situation. It's a people's rights situation. Because individuals in Skukuneland who have access to capital or capitalists then go and make deals and own a mine, and that mine benefits those individuals who happen to come from Skukuneland and those owners of capital. I had an opportunity to address a meeting in Skukuneland, and King Tulare was literally crying and saying this government that they voted for, that they fought to bring about, is letting them down. And he was saying, does the government want us to first take up arms to solve the problems? So I am saying that this emphasis on human rights in South Africa is not helping us. They are questions of people's rights, and those people's rights must be addressed as such. For instance, you take Vembe area. There are a number of communities that are in exile. In Luonde, next to Albasin Dam on the way from Makado to Toyando, there's a community of Matiza which was forcibly removed. Now they are living in exile in the Njelele area. And that's not human rights. It's a people's rights, because the whole community has been moved and then is accommodated by another community where there's not even a piece of land to plow. You have the community of Lubola, again in the Bembe area. They've been moved to Vuani. And now with the problems in Vuani, they must be moved further to Malamulela. Is that a human rights issue? These are people's rights issues. There's a community of Magoro living in exile. So they are exiled communities in South Africa as we are speaking now. Now, what are we doing about these situations? Because freedom cannot just be freedom to allow me and you to hold, to have a title deed. There are communities, and the Constitution is very clear on the rights of communities. which must be exercised together. So I want to suggest that we put on the high on the agenda the question of mining, especially in Skukuneli. There's another problem on heritage in Marimake. An Australian company comes to South Africa, gets to a mountain where people have been worshipping for ages, and then they demolish the sacred sites. And religion is protected by the constitution. And some individual who has access to Australians make a deal with them to come and violate the constitution of this country. So heritage, mining, these areas must be dealt with. Exiled communities, that must be dealt with. Land. Honorable Maila raised earlier on the question of land. You have the whole of Polokwane owned by one person and his families. And now what are we saying? Is that what we understand by human rights? That one person must own the whole city and the rest of the people are his tenants? You have Mujaji's Kloof in the Mopane area. The people want to kill the councillors because the councillors have no access to land, but there is land owned by one individual. This morning I get a phone call saying that this individual who owns the whole town already is also buying land under claim. And the law says you cannot buy a land under claim. And how is it happening? So I am saying there was also the issue of race courses and golf courses. The previous officials, when they knew that, that their time has come to an end, they used their official positions to sign 99-year leases, and then they resign. They go then and do business, and the new municipalities don't have access to municipal facilities, and the people turn against them, and they say government is not delivering. But government has set up Chapter 9 institutions. Now, I think it is now time that there must be a reprioritization of what should Chapter 9 institutions do. And I believe that this forum for institutions supporting democracy, which is said to be dysfunctional, we need to convene a meeting with the deputy speaker who is responsible and bring all the Chapter 9 institutions and just say, are we existing for the sake of existing, or are we existing to address the critical issues facing our people? The other issue is the question of, I was happy to hear that Honorable Swart, you were referring to religious bodies. You know, most of these missionary societies, they got a large chunk of land free of charge because some of them collaborated with the Transvaal and other republics. And the land that was taken by the churches, where is it? I visited the Berlin Mission in Germany to find that the Berlin Mission still owns the land here, and some land has been sold. They created a bank, and that issue must be addressed. We need a dialogue with the religious bodies that own land to say, whose land is it? How do they get it? What are they saying about it? Because now the people, not individual, the people must get the land. But I'm happy that at least the Department of Arts and Culture has started dialogues with the religious bodies. And then on the 1st of May, there's going to be a national interfaith dialogue. Maybe the Human Rights Commission, together with Arts and Culture and others, should be party to that dialogue, which we must intensify, because We don't want our people to rise against the churches. The churches are very important. They're doing an important work, but they must be addressed about what went wrong in the past. Now, with regard to racism and colonialism, I think we make one mistake that we ignore what the founders of our democracy did. There is no leader that I know of who addressed the question of racism and colonialism better than Oliver Tambo. 1980, Oliver Tambo addressed the World Council of Churches. He even defined what racism is. In 1987, Oliver Tambo addressed the World Council of Churches, and he even dealt with a program of action to combat racism. And I agree with Honorable Maila here. What is being done now on racism is to deal with the effects, not the causes of racism. So Honorable Maila's view that we must heal here, but we can heal if we deal with the effects. So I think that we must put racism and colonialism high on the agenda, because racism was used to justify land seizure, used to justify the turning of African people into slaves and laborers, used again to justify white minority rule. So you can't separate racism and colonialism. And right now, the students are restless. They say decolonize everything. Last week, there was a meeting of the conference of the National Association of Democratic Lawyers. Even the lawyers now say decolonize the law. So this matter goes to the heart of social cohesion and nation building. So we can no longer afford to address things piecemeal. We have to go to the roots of the problems that we have. So my take would be that as soon as possible, we get the Deputy Speaker to convene a meeting of Chapter 9 institutions, and then we look at the mandates and the programs in the light of the challenges that are making our people restless. I respect the question of impact legislation and so on, impact cases. But I don't think, you know, in the 80s, lawyers' organization who wanted foreign funding would want to do impact cases to attract funding. But now, in these circumstances, we can no longer just wait for impact cases. We know what the problems are. I think we must confront them. Chairperson, I want you to respond, but I think what comes through is really that we may be very too slow, and then we may be overtaken by events, and we don't want another unrest. We want to move forward, consolidate our democracy and the culture of human rights. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members. We will attempt to give answers to the questions raised, and I will ask my colleagues to chip in answering some of these questions. Question whether we can go back to court and ask to be released from the obligations that were imposed on us to monitor. It's a double-edged sword. The Chairperson, yes, we, and honorable members, yes, we can go back and ask the court to release us. Whether they will, it's a different question. the real problem is that the court, in ordering that somebody has to monitor, is because they wanted to make sure that the prayers that we prayed are given effect, and its decisions are given effect to. It is a question that we ourselves have started debating within the organization. With regards to the information regulator, I would say that we have met with the information regulator only once, and we have attempted to meet with the information regulator on two occasions. The last occasion was on the 27th of March, and the idea being that the Department of Justice would be represented there by the Deputy Minister of Justice. Unfortunately, he got called here, and so that meeting was postponed. We, in the initial meeting, we explored the possibilities or the modalities of handing over to the information regulator, and we needed to look at the legislation to see how and who does what. The follow-up meetings were to deal with that aspect, and then put in place the memorandum in terms of which the information regulator takes over. At this moment, the information regulator is still setting up, and while they are setting up, they have indicated that they cannot perform the functions that they are required to perform, and therefore that the Human Rights Commission should continue. In my discussion with the Minister of Justice on the other Friday, we have agreed that as soon as possible we will try to meet to effect this meeting in order to take the matter forward. there was a question on land. To what degree are these implemented? Perhaps my colleagues will help me with that. I am not sure I have recorded the question. My sincere apology. And then I assumed that the comment on xenophobia was a comment. The suggestion that we need to involve religious communities is taken with gratitude. It is actually one of the strategies that we have discussed. Even this morning we discussed that strategy somewhere, because we believe that the religious, the faith-based organizations have got a very wide reach in terms of people that need to be reached, and we were saying that we need to work with them so that we can send our messages through them. So it's one of the things that we're doing. But one of the matters that we have also discussed is how can we work in case of problems with farm workers, whether we should not work with the farmers themselves and rope them in order to try and put across the message. It is still at an early stage, but we have an idea of how this could be done, because we can also reach the farmers through the church and then see how we can rope our strategy around that. But I would like to thank the Honorable Horn for that. The working relationship with the office supporting Chapter 9 institutions in Parliament. Since we arrived as the new commission, we have had some contact with them. There was an attempt to have a meeting in March, but it was at the time that some of us were overseas, and that has not happened. But we're looking forward to the meeting. The issue of the subpoena powers that the Commission has during investigation, it's powers that we can use. It is powers that in the Act are actually specifically provided under the mandate of the Commission to investigate. It is a question as to what happens once the Commission has completed the investigation and issued a recommendation, and that recommendation has been conveyed to the government, to the government department concerned, or to Parliament, and it has to be implemented. We will go back and consider it, but I do have a doubt whether we could use those powers in order to deal with enforcement. Commissioner Gum, perhaps you may, when you get a chance, also deal with this with this issue. I do agree with Honourable Maile that perhaps we may also even want to look at the amendment of the Act. Commissioner Gum perhaps also may look at this in relation to the EFF case and the ability of other Chapter 9 institution to pass binding decisions. With regard to the budget, I do concede that the government doesn't have money, and that there are so many demands for money, and therefore that it is important that all institutions try to work within that level of available resources. We would, as a commission, hesitate to come and ask for money, especially because we go to communities and we see the level of need in terms of access to services, water. There are communities who are still using bucket systems. There are communities who don't have roads. There are communities who complain that the health facilities are too far away. There was a story on TV in the Eastern Cape where the woman miscarried and the child died because for 24 hours they were waiting for the ambulance and they couldn't go there because the nearest hospital was just too far away. The challenge is quite big. The resources are realistically small, which is true. And it constitutes a vicious cycle in the sense that the expectation is that we move at a particular pace, but that pace can be attained when there is a little bit more resources than we are having. We in the commission have said we need to try and work smart. We are trying to cooperate with the public protector. We're trying to cooperate with other institutions supporting democracy, with civil society, and so on, out of the realization that there is very limited resources that we've got to work with. We do, Honorable Bongo, accept that it is difficult to get additional resources, but we are constrained by the need that we see there. There is a number of honorable members have, for example, mentioned the issue of the treatment of people living on farms, and that treatment creates problems because those people living in farms, eventually in some of the provinces, they leave the farms, they go to the towns and townships, they squat there, and they then require housing, they require schooling, they require health care and water, sanitation, and so on. And so there is a limit to the resources that we have in order to meet with all the challenges that have been raised and to meet the priority areas that have been highlighted. But in my earlier presentation, I did say that as a commission, we have indicated that we would like to try to do more with less. But there is a limit to which we can also do that, which is why, therefore, that the Commission is constrained to put this request on on the first occasion. Awareness and visibility is an issue that we have confronted even on the very first day that we came together as a Commission. We would like to reach as many of our people as possible in terms of creating awareness, in terms of educating our people about their rights and their responsibilities, may I say. We have therefore decided that in order to ensure and enhance the visibility of the Commission, that each province will have a commissioner that will be the focal commissioner for that province. For example, the chairperson is a focal commissioner for the Gauteng province, so that is the first port of call for issues arising or relating to the province. We have focal commissioners who are specialists in certain areas, in which case, from time to time, that person can then be called or deployed or sent to another province to deal with that particular focus area. Commissioner Gum will deal with a question relating to the enforcement, the EFF decision. On cooperation with other Chapter 9 institutions, as I have said, that we are working towards that. We're trying to arrange meetings to renew the way in which we can work with the other Chapter 9 institutions. But it's still early days, especially because, as I have said, that we started at a very critical time at the end of the financial year when certain deliverables needed to be done within a particular time, when we needed to develop a budget and annual performance plans and deal with the things that arose unexpectedly. But I've had meetings with some of the Chapter 9 institutions already. I have dealt with the question of the information regulator. With regard to SEDIMENI, as I said, we continue to work with the team that is responsible for ensuring that the recommendations of the health ombud are met. But besides that, we are trying to scope the work that we said we were going to undertake to do an investigation into the systemic problems relating to the treatment of people with mental disabilities in the whole of the country. The COO can add in this respect, Chair, with your permission. And then Commissioner Jana will deal with the serious abuses on farms, and Commissioner Gum will deal with the question on colonialism. The question on how far we have moved since we started is a question that is also of great interest to this current commission, because if you are going to develop a strategy, you need to know how much of the field has been plowed and prepared. If you don't know, you will develop a strategy that may result in you going back and planting, plowing and planting in an area that has already been treated. The difficulty also that one has to confront is that there are these issues that crop up and cannot wait, and the commission has to work out how to focus on certain issues and not neglect other issues. For example, if, as the Honorable Mpumlwana was saying, don't work on complaints, go out to the communities and work there, well and good. But we are receiving in the order of 5,000 plus complaints. What do we do with those complaints, with the limited resources that we have? We have to make certain very painful choices at some stage, because if some of the complaints come in, the question was, where was the Human Rights Commission, or what is the Human Rights Commission doing, and so on. And the Human Rights Commission then cannot be available everywhere all the time at all places. It's difficult considering the resources that it has. But going back to the question of measurement, it's a question that as a commission we would like to really seriously consider, because it will also help us. We were talking about a week or so ago about to what extent is there awareness of human rights in the country. You know, again, this goes towards measurement. Must we add more resources and energy on advocacy and communication? And we believe that we should do that, but we do not know to what extent there is that awareness. We know that there are areas that have not been touched, that have not been reached, you know, but if we reach those areas, does it mean therefore that the work of the commission in educating, in creating awareness has been done? If that has been done, does it mean therefore that the culture of human rights has been grown or has not been grown?
The problem with ourselves as Parliament as well, filing reports, not acting. Because there's a very good report by Commissioner Amamiya, and nobody has looked at the report and say, how can we take it forward? Because Chapter 9 institution produce reports which comes to Parliament for filing and not for action.
Thank you, Chairperson. I mean, in my introductory remarks, I said one of the things that we noted when we came in as the Commission was that there are recommendations and which have not been implemented, and we need, as a Commission, to work a strategy as to how to deal with those. Because, for example, on racism, on healthcare, there have been recommendations before. Should we, because of the persistence of the problem, should we hold other hearings and issue other recommendations and so on? The amount of money that has been spent in investigating the problem earlier on would go to waste if we are also going to do the same thing and simply just pass recommendations. The acting CEO will deal with the issue of the audit, with your permission, Chair. Yes, it is true that no commissioner belongs to one part of the country. It is true, but as I said earlier on, the idea is to have one commissioner who will be available or will be liaising with the province on an ongoing basis, attend to...
Are you not unfair to us? At the last meeting, we agreed that we'll go and discuss the matter and bring us a report. Where is that report?
Chairperson, yes, we agreed on that one. The report was basically to talk about where in the geographical space of the country the commissioners would be, not so much as to what province each commissioner was going to be asked to impact on a daily basis. And I thought that the question was relating to the second part, not the first part. That is why I'm taking the question on the first part, Chairperson. Honourable members, we went back after the first.
I see there is unrest, Honourable Bongo.
No, Chair, it's not necessarily an unrest, but the suggestion that they need not need to answer all the questions because they are not under pressure to answer all the questions. Those that they feel they still need to respond in writing, they can still go and respond and bring the reports, because I was just conscious with the colleagues were raising that the bus is going at 5.
No, Honorable Bongo is right. You see, that's why I was asking about the report. Like this focus commissioner on provinces and so on, if you can put that issue together with the report that we asked, and then we still need a report as to how we are going to deal with the matter. And also, you know, for instance, the things on colonialism awareness, I don't think we should go into those things. We have noted them, and I think we can live with what we have received. Actually, let me say, you are doing very well. You have done very well. The challenges that we are raising have nothing to do with the weaknesses on your side. It's really that the whole architecture, there's something wrong with it. So that's why I was suggesting that we need all Chapter 9 institutions together with the Office of the Speaker and just say, where are we? Can we still afford to do things the way we have done them before? I think if the honorable members are happy, we can leave the matter there and then just say the healing process that Honorable Maila is talking about, those are the type of issues that we must put high on the agenda and as we move forward. And the paradigm shift. Are we happy with that?
We're happy with that, Chairperson. I would have liked to appeal to the Honourable Majake and the committee, actually, to allow us to go and write something on the paradigm shift, because for me, I foresee certain opportunities, but also I see certain serious challenges on how you implement the paradigm shift within the setup that we have. Yes, we are, as a commission, trying actually to move away and do a paradigm shift, but I think the commission needs a little bit of time and space to sit down and say this is how, so if we could be allowed to respond to that question in writing.
Democracy and leadership don't mean that there must be consensus on every point. Leaders must provide leadership. You go and develop a vision,
yes,
and put it to your colleagues to input, and it doesn't mean before it comes here there must be consensus in your ranks. But we want leadership now, and participatory leadership, but the head has got to lead the body.
Yes, Chairperson, I fully agree with that. The challenges I saw were not within the commission, but were within the kind of animal that we're trying to dissect. And that's what I wanted to say. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you,
early day.
Wow, I would have loved for them to actually answer the question.